Well, it's been 100 years since the formation of the Soviet Union, and although the country has not been around for three decades already, the impact it's had on world geopolitics has been so profound that it's still a subject that's widely spoken about today. And today we're also going to get the opportunity to discuss that with the renowned Russian philosopher Alexander Dugin. Thank you very much for joining us and giving us time for this interview, Mr. Dugin. The first question I want to ask has to do with the Soviet Union specifically. Do you think that it would have been possible to preserve it? And if it was preserved, how do you think the Soviet Union would look as a multinational country in 2022?
First of all, we need to understand that, geopolitically speaking, Soviet Union was a continuation of the Russian Empire. Ideologically, it was quite different. It was based on the totally opposite values and ideas, but as geopolitical entity, as heartland, as Eurasian landmass, and the vision of the classics of geopolitics, like Mackinder or Brzezinski, Soviet Union was direct continuation and realization of the land power, opposite to sea power. So in that sense, that was a kind of realization of the main geopolitical contradiction that is the core of the human history, according to Mackinder. So if we consider the fall of the Soviet Union in this geopolitical aspect, the meaning of that was a kind of defeat of the land power in front of the sea power. That was a great catastrophe of this heartland and the big achievement of the sea power or global Western liberal civilization. In that sense, we could imagine a continuation of Soviet Union during last three decades. Like some Eurasianist thinkers presumed it can or would be or could be. The end of the ideology of communism, it was almost inevitable, unavoidable. We need to get rid of this exhausted Soviet dogmatism, but that could not mean directly the fall of the Soviet Union or this disappearance of unity of this geopolitical entity. And if Soviet Union would survive this catastrophe, it will be a kind of Eurasian Union, a kind of Eurasian Empire, or return to the classical Russian Empire with strategical centralism and multiplicity of the ethnic groups living inside. So I think that was quite possible. And precisely now we are dealing with the will of the Moscow to reconquer this geopolitical space. There is the moment of the return to the geopolitics, because land power once more wants now to reaffirm its independence, sovereignty in front of the collective West that is today under almost full control of the Atlanticist, thalassocratic elite of sea power. Now we are reconstructing this geopolitical space without, obviously, without Soviet ideology, but trying to restore the greatness of the empire or recreate Eurasian Union or create a new.
The fall of the Soviet Union, of course, is something that's studied very heavily in other socialist countries that are still existing today, especially China. They study the fall of the Soviet Union a lot to understand what they could do differently as specifically a communist country. So they've reformed into a more market model while still retaining this sort of socialist ideology. Do you think that could have been possible if the Soviet Union were to be preserved?
I think it would would be possible. And China, precisely, has got the main lesson of the fall of the Soviet Union, that you should and you are obliged to preserve and save, to save the country, the unity, the strategical control over it, or including all ethnic groups, because China is multi-ethnical society as well as Soviet Union was and Russia is, without transforming the country without losing the power of the central government. So you could make reform, you could change some aspect of economy, but you never should lose the sovereignty and the control over geopolitical space. In order to make correct transformation of the ideology, you shouldn't discard ancient tradition. So now China is a communist political power, almost totalitarian, with Confucianism in the center, successful control over growing liberal market. The Chinese didn't give to the society liberal democracy with liberal market. They have preserved vertical government of the country with unique and united power, political power, and they have submitted liberal economy to it. And I think that is example how in the positive situation new Russian Soviet Union could be. Centralized power with full geopolitical control over all parts and ethnic zones, with mixed economy, with combination of the socialism with traditionalism, with Christianity, with Russian tradition values, and that could function, that could work as it works in China. We have lost the chance to transform our society ideologically, but to prevent this collapse and to save the unity that is much more than Soviet Union, because that is unity of the heartland of Eurasia, the unity of empire, if you want. So that is possible, and China shows that it is possible. Collapse of the Soviet Union was suicide, and not just demand for independence of the former republics. That was suicide made in the center. So we are fully responsible. We Russians, we are fully responsible for that. It's not only just nationalists from the periphery. That was the crime made by the government of Moscow, by the center.
Well, you used the term near totalitarianism connected to Confucianism to describe what modern China has basically reformed into. And it's interesting to me because as an American, totalitarianism, the term as I understand it, is basically has long been just a word that people in the West have used to attack Russia or China. And when I moved here, I realized that, you know, things are a lot more nuanced in countries that are just labeled totalitarianism, like the state just controls everything. I just wanted to understand, like, what exactly did you mean by that in terms of China? And also, in the Soviet Union, would you say that that was a totalitarian society as well?
In the West, we are dealing with pure totalitarian liberalism. So that is only hypocrisy to pretend that anybody else except liberals are totalitarian regimes, and totalitarian only liberals are not totalitarian. Chinese society is not liberal or liberal totalitarian. It is just holistic. We could use more appropriate word, holistic. Holistic system, it is the system when the common is put over the individual. You could blame that as totalitarian, but we can blame as totalitarian as well this liberal democracy that pretends to have the absolute truth and to impose this so-called truth on anybody else in the world without regarding the particularity of different civilizations. So there is inherited racism in the Western liberalism because it identifies the Western historical, political, cultural experience with universal one. So if you say that the West it is the same as humanity, and humanity is under West, undeveloped, as not yet Western enough, it is purely racist approach. It could be openly racist as in a form of national socialism based on biology, but it is as well cultural racism that we are dealing with in the modern days liberal globalism. If Chinese think this system or this regime fits them well and they like that, it, so that up to them to decide, not to for the activists of open society or proponents of liberalism. So let the people decide for themselves, and that is the main principle of real democracy, if you want, on the international level.
We've been talking a lot about communism, and I wanted to ask if you see a sort of unifying ideology in modern Russian society like the one that was in the Soviet Union, because obviously for most, I would say, of the Soviet period, people were united by this one idea, communism. They wanted to build communism, and that was something they had to strive towards. Do you think that the modern Russian people have something like that? And if not, what could fill that gap?
Could not fill that gap. We could not return to the Soviet time. But in spite of some sympathy, growing sympathy to Soviet time, but return is impossible because we could not accept this dogmatism. Marxism is out of the questions. So we need to get further and to mix demand of social justice, Soviet future, with traditional values reaffirmed by recently statement of our president that has made a decree in order to defend and reaffirm on the political level traditional values in Russian society. So I think that's should be outside of political Western modernity. We need to explore more Russian tradition of Slavophiles, of Dostoevsky, Christian Orthodoxy, and we need to rediscover non-Western or pre-modern, if you want, post-modern types of political thought. So we need to join pre-modernity with post-modernity, and we need to make relative the Western experience. So the West is only part of the humanity, and in spite of it pretending to be the whole of the humanity, it is not so. So we need to rediscover our own political thought of when Russia wasn't under dominating influence of the West. So that is really the challenge for us to rediscover or recreate this ideology that should be organic, that should have its historical dimension, but at the same time, it should be new, fresh. It should be creative in some way. And all that in direct refutation of the Western liberal hegemony against open society, against individualism, against liberal democracy that West tries to impose on everybody, but as well to throw out communism as dogmatism and fascism as because all three political theories, main political theories, all three of them were originated in the modern West. And in that sense, I agree with Hannah Arendt. Western modernity is totalitarian, and we need to get out of this Western type of totalitarianism to arrive to the positive, fresh, and organic Russian holism, Russian Orthodox, or better, Eurasian holism that could include the other traditional society in the main symphony of the ethnic groups, of the peoples and religions. So that is that will be completely new form of ideology that is much closer maybe to Eurasianism or to some mixture between traditionalism and social justice.
And how would you say economics plays into this? Because at least with the Soviet experience, command economics made its significant contributions to the development of Russia, while at the same time we saw, of course, stagnation towards the end. But in terms of, you know, market economics, we saw what kind of situation Russia was in back in 2014, when it was much more connected to the Western financial system and the West decided to put sanctions on it, as opposed to now, when these unprecedented Western sanctions, once Russia was far less dependent on the dollar, they had far less of an effect on Russia. So where do you see economics playing into this? Do you see a Russian future more oriented towards markets or towards command economics?
Now, in the last decree of our president, the traditional value, the main traditional value, is accepted the predominance of the spirit over the matter. And that is quite Russian. So that is the main key. So economy, when you are obsessed with economy, you is obliged to follow more and more this confrontation, this competition with the other. The more you are engaged in the fatal logic of matter, you become the slave of matter and material transformation. You are not anymore master of the economy. You become slave of economy. So as Louis Dumont, French sociologist, has said, in the 20th century, we had three political regime: communism, liberalism, and fascism. Communism and liberalism were obsessed by economy, and they have shown more or less impressive results. Liberalism better, communism slightly worse, but fascism, for example, was absolutely unconcerned by economy. There was no specially fascist or specially national socialist system of economy. And they have shown during Hitler era the results compatible and maybe much better than those regimes obsessed with economy. So that doesn't mean that fascism was good. Absolutely, Louis Dumont was French democrat sociologist. He just wanted to emphasize that more you are engaged in economy as theory, as the main criterion of development, the less you are prepared to deal with real challenges. So I think that in Russian ideology, in Russian life, we need to get rid of this obsession of economy. So, and that is the way to make economy really sane. So we need to create logical and natural approach to solve economic problem without any dogmatism, without this competition between socialism and capitalism. So we need to get rid of the dogmatism in economy, and we need to put economy under the spiritual development. So we need to say first of all culture rather than civilization in Spenglerian terms. So our problem is not to be engaged in this or that economical dogma. We need to create functioning society, first of all just, based on justice, on tradition, on the happiness of the people, and all these elements are more moral, are more spiritual values than economy, and that doesn't mean we should ignore economy. No, we should ignore economic dogmatism. If market economy works in some zone of society, let it be. If state state involvement is functional, is positive, let it be as well. If there is a common communitarian approach in some group of population, let be communes, some form of communitarian societies. So we should get rid of any kind of orthodoxy in economy. What was the best economical performance in history of last century, we see that precisely the mixture. So, for example, American strategy of mercantilism and protectionism with free markets. In Europe, that is social politics, almost socialism, with some freedom of enterprises. So the balance between state and private capital is always changing. It is always relation. It is not the dogma. So we need to find the relation that fits, that would fit better to Russian experience, to Russian society, and that would help us better to solve the concrete ongoing problem.
The Cold War was marked by what many historians agree was a sort of bipolar world order between the West, the capitalist West, and the socialist East. To what extent do you think that legacy of a bipolar world order is still relevant today? Because a lot of people say that we're in a new Cold War right now. What do you have to say about like multipolarity in the world? Would you say that that they have some sort of parallels at the same time? Because the world does seem to be developing somehow into a more Eurasian camp and the Western camp that has existed for a while now.
So on one side, there is still continuation of bipolarity, because there is the one pole untouched. So among two poles that existed before the end of the Soviet Union, one has disappeared and the other is here, is present. So that is the kind of residue of a bipolar system, and the West behaves itself as if it is still in this cold bipolar war, and consider the Russia as the heir of the Soviet Union with whom you need to fight. So that is a kind of inertia, that is continuation of the bipolar world vision. Multipolarity is emerging now, but it's something different. It is not one ideology against the other, one pole against the other. There is totally different vision of coexistence that doesn't mean necessary war or conflict, but that doesn't mean necessary neither peace. So it depends. So multipolarity, it is precisely the end of the bipolarity. And I made an idea that the West doesn't want to accept that in multipolarity, the West will not be one of the two, but one of few poles, and will reduce the Western claim of hegemonity, of universality, of globalism to some concrete borders. So that is reprovincialization of the West. That is precisely multipolarity. Russia defends now in its war against the unipolar system not only our own status, position as independent pole, but as well the other poles, China, India, Islamic world, Latin America, Africa. So that is the first multipolar war that is going on now in Ukraine, because the West wanted at any price to preserve and save its hegemony, unipolar system that is continuation of bipolarity, and that is why such Russophobia, such hatred for Russia. It is continuation of bipolar understanding of the architecture of the international relations. Main problem for the West to accept that West could be a province of the humanity, not the center, not the capital. So it is just a part. It is not the whole of humanity. And multipolarity is about that. So fighting for multipolarity, Russia fights for right to different civilizations to affirm themselves with its inherent system of values that could coincide or not coincide with Western values. So nothing universal exists in multipolarity. There is a kind of relative, partly universalisms. Chinese universalism, Islamic universalism, Russian-Eurasian universalism, African and Latin American. So there is not only one universalism, Western, modern, but there could exist and coexist civilizations defending their right to create their own political, cultural, artist system. So that is the meaning of the multiplicity, plurality of the civilization. And multipolarity fights against this claim, not against the West as such, but against the claim of the West to be the model, to be the unique example of the progress of the history of an understanding of time, of man, of technology. So any civilization has its own right to understand, to interpret what man is, what time is, what God is, what death is, what good and evil are. So that is up to civilization, and there is no one unique, universal model to impose on all these civilizations. That is what is this fight in Ukraine is.